a brief summary of what we discussed yesterday. We began by citing how this phrase is actually part of a verse in which not just the guest, but the mother, the father, the guru, and the guest are all to be treated, served, and respected as God. And this is very important for several reasons. We mentioned some of the reasons, three reasons in particular. One, that it makes for social cohesion, for warm relationships amongst people, and in general happiness in society. Secondly, that it serves as a platform for performing spiritual activities. It's very much an integral part of spiritual culture. And thirdly, we discussed the concept of karmic bondage accruing from debts that we incur simply by existing in this world. And we saw that there were five kinds of debts or categories to whom we have debts. And the Vedic scriptures prescribe different specific activities to discharge or counteract those debts. And specifically for the debt that we owe to one of these five categories, which is human race or humanity, one of the things that's prescribed is Atithi Seva, service to guests. Therefore, in ordinary pious life, serving guests is considered a very pious activity, and one becomes free from sin and leads a happy and peaceful life as far as is possible in this material world. We also mentioned how this actually causes karmic bondage for those who are sinful and who whimsically act in this world, violating the orders of the scriptures. They naturally have to take birth again and again to suffer the reactions of their previously performed karma. But even those who live piously and those who act on the material but pious platform to discharge these debts, they also have to take birth again. They are also not free from karmic bondage, because as I mentioned, every second of existence in this world incurs debt, because we are breathing. So the moment you breathe, you are indebted to the demigods who supply the air, the demigods in charge of the breathing process, the nostrils and so on. So therefore it's a never-ending process. So even though being on the pious platform is much better than being on the sinful platform, nevertheless, it is not a permanent solution. The permanent solution is to surrender to Lord Krishna and to become his pure devotee. And in that way, we become free from all these debts on a material platform. And of course, as a devotee, one would also discharge these debts, but in a Krishna conscious way. One doesn't externally and separately have to do that, but nevertheless, because one is living amongst people in society, so therefore one just Krishnizes, so to speak, these relationships and these debts. We also discuss briefly some elements of Vedic hospitality or the service to guests as described in the scriptures, in the Vedic scriptures. Now, the important point here is that there is no, and we'll continue from now, from where we left off from yesterday. We also mentioned, by the way, a little story that was told by Sita Devi to Hanuman about how one should offer hospitality and protection for all those who come to us and to our home in particular. So anyway, hospitality to guests is something that is mandatory in the Vedic culture, not just for those who are wealthy, but even for the poorest of the poor. Inasmuch as devotion to the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, is mandatory not just for those who are wealthy, but even for the poorest of the poor. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Patram Pushpam Phalam Toyam Yome Bhaktiya Prayachati Tadaham Bhakti Bharatam Ashnami Prayatatmanaha. If one offers me a leaf, a fruit, a flower, or some water with love, I accept it happily. So therefore, even a poor person can offer some water, can offer a tulsi leaf, can offer a little fruit or one flower to Krishna. So in the same way as devotion to Krishna is for everyone, one can draw a parallel to serving guests and say that this is also for everyone. In fact, there is one injunction in the scripture which says that one who regularly serves guests ensures that he or she will never be ruined by poverty. So even if one is poor, if one is devoted to serving guests nicely, then Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune, will always look kindly upon that person. When a guest comes to our place, whether it is our home, or to our temple, to our ashram, or any place that we consider home, then it's very important that we make the guest feel very important, like a VIP. The guest should feel completely happy and satisfied. The guest should be pampered and almost spoiled. Of course, don't overdo it. Then it looks artificial. It should be natural. It should be spontaneous. It should be from the heart. And when a guest feels like that, then the guest actually goes away so happy. And the host also feels extremely happy. One of the greatest feelings of hurt that a guest may experience is when he or she feels that the host does not enjoy his or presence in that home. So the host of the guest goes away with that feeling that I wasn't really welcome. It was just an external formality. It was done like that. Then that's not really very good. That's not the protocol for taking care of guests. Anyway, there are many such injunctions in the scriptures. But let's come down to a few stories. We had a lot of philosophy yesterday. And before I began this series of talks, one devotee was mentioning, oh, finally we're going to have just kathar stories and no philosophy. And I said, sorry, we're going to have some philosophy, because just stories without philosophy, no, that's not good. So we should have philosophy also, because we should learn something from the stories as well. Of course, when it comes to Krishna's pastimes and his devotees' pastimes, if we simply hear them with devotion and attention, even if there aren't any obvious lessons to learn from them, we still get purified enormously and develop taste for hearing about Krishna. But nevertheless, it's also very useful to learn lessons where there are lessons to learn. Let me tell you a story from the Mahabharata in connection to the service of guests. This was during the Ashwamedha Yajna, or the horse sacrifice that was conducted by Yudhishthira Maharaj. Now, I'm sure you all heard of the Rajasuya Yajna, another grand sacrifice that was performed by Yudhishthira Maharaj. But that was much before the battle of Kurukshetra. But the Ashwamedha Yajna was performed after the battle of Kurukshetra. And in this horse sacrifice, which incidentally Lord Ram also performed, and many of you may have heard about it or read about it, so King Yudhishthira sent out his four brothers in the four directions to garner tribute and taxes and gifts from various other kings, because that was a prerequisite for conducting the Ashwamedha Yajna, or the horse sacrifice. So the four brothers came back successfully, carrying tribute with them and a lot of wealth. And then a grand ceremony was organized for the sacrifice that spanned many days. Just like today we have the Olympic Games and World Football Games and whatever. So in those days the ceremonies like this used to be much on a much grander scale than we have today, but they were mostly for such purposes, some sacrifices and so on. On finally, Vyasadev, he approached Yudhishthira Maharaj and said, "So my dear king, today is the day when the actual sacrifice must be performed. And please ensure that you give 3 times the fees, fees meaning the dakshina. These are not fees like you pay to a lawyer or a doctor, not prescribed fees. It's just something that comes from your heart. It's called dakshina. So pay 3 times the dakshina to the priests and you will get the effect of performing three ashvamedha yajnas." So in due course the whole sacrifice was performed and Yudhishthira Maharaj had accumulated a huge quantity of gold and he handed it over to Vyasadev. Actually, before that, he handed over the earth back to Vyasadev. The Ashvamedha Yajna is performed by a king who wants to establish that he is the king of the earth. And the system is, strangely enough, from the point of view of modern vision, that once the king performs this ceremony to establish his sovereignty and supremacy over the whole earth, he gives this earth in charity to the priests. He's worked so hard to get the earth, and now that he gets it, he gives it in charity. So he gave the whole earth in charity to Vyasadeva. And Vyasadeva said, no. I'm a Brahmana, I'm not going to take care of the earth. You take it back. When Yudhishthira Maharaj was saying this to Vyasadeva, he said, "I have also decided, because this is the injunction of the scripture, that after the horse sacrifice, the earth must be returned to the head priest. And now I declare that I will take Vanaprastha. I will retire from worldly life and I will enter into the forest to perform austerities." And that created a huge stir in the whole assembly. Draupadi and the 4 other Pandavas, they agreed with the proposal of the king. But Vyasadeva said, no, you cannot do that. You take back the earth and rule according to the principles of Dharma. So now please go ahead and give all this gold in charity. So then Yudhishthira Maharaj gave the entire accumulated gold to Vyasadeva. And then Vyasadeva distributed it to the priests, who then in turn distributed it to the other Brahmanas. And there was a lot left. And that was given to all the other people who had come. It was an enormous exercise in hospitality. And we'll talk about that perhaps if we get time tomorrow when we discuss the Rajasuya Yajna. Enormous hospitality. Because there were kings, and kings are very temperamental and fastidious about what they want. A little thing that's out of place, they get upset like anything. And the Brahmanas were also like that sometimes. So each one was looked after with utmost care and diligence, and everyone was completely satisfied. Now that's saying something, because when you have thousands upon thousands of guests and every single one of them is kept happy, it's quite an achievement. So then once this distribution of gold and everything was done, every single person who attended was completely satisfied. And this whole ceremony was coming to a successful conclusion. Just at that moment, a wonderful thing happened. A blue-eyed mongoose suddenly appeared on the scene and spoke in a loud and awe-inspiring voice, easily audible to everyone assembled there. He said, "This sacrificial ceremony performed by King Yudhishthira is not even equal to a little quantity of barley powder that was offered in charity by a certain Brahmana in Kurukshetra. Now everyone assembled was shocked to hear this criticism, because all of them had been glorifying this ceremony as if they had five mouths. They hadn't found a single point on which to criticize the ceremony and the arrangements and the hospitality and so on. And all of a sudden this mongoose comes along and declares that this sacrifice is insignificant. It's not even equal to a little quantity of barley powder given away by a brahmana in charity in Kurukshetra. Now many of those, or most of those assembled there, were also wise sages. So they said, there's something here. So they said, my dear mongoose, you don't look like an ordinary mongoose that we sometimes see on the grounds of Bhaktivedanta Manor. You look like something that's descended from the higher planets. You're definitely something else. And your body also doesn't seem ordinary, because you have a body that's half made of gold. We've never seen a mongoose whose body is half made of gold. It appears that there is some substance of what you're saying, but it's a mystery. So can you reveal this mystery to us? So the mongoose began speaking, and everyone was hearing in rapt attention. He said, do not doubt my words. What I say is the truth. And this is the story of a brahmana who lived in Kurukshetra. He was very austere and very pious. And he was following a vrata or a vow called the Umchara Vrata, which is a vow wherein the person eats only whatever grains are collected from an agricultural field. Whatever grains have fallen here and there. See, he goes into various agricultural fields and picks up the grains that he can find lying around after the harvest has been done. And then he collects that, and that's all that he eats. And now this brahmana was not alone. He had a wife, he had a son, and the son was also married. So there were four people in the house. And this is how they used to live. Because the wealth of a brahmana in the Vedic culture was austerity, and the wealth and the glory was their poverty. So the brahmanas lived like that, some of them. So one time there was a famine, and it was summer. There was no food available anywhere. The brahmana still, as a matter of duty, would go out and collect some grains from here and there in the fields. But there was hardly anything. So all the four members of the family had severe pangs of hunger. One day, however, he managed to get a little bit of barley. So he crushed the barley into powder to make some meal out of it. And he divided that into four portions. One for himself, one for his wife, one for his son, and one for the daughter-in-law. And just at that moment, another brahmana came along. And this brahmana was well aware of the rules of hospitality. Here was a guest, and the guest was hungry. So he said, my dear guest, please take a seat. He offered him some water, he offered him a place to sit, some sweet words of welcome. And since we're on the topic, actually, the minimum welcome that is to be accorded to a guest is threefold. Number one, a few sweet words when he or she arrives at your door. Number two, offer a place to sit. And number three, some refreshments. At the very least, some water. And an extended idea of this hospitality is, you go out of your door or to welcome that person in, and depending on who that person is, it could be a ceremonious welcome, and then you offer that person water, washing his feet. Sometimes you can wash feet yourself. And then as the person comes in, you offer lamps to him or her, welcome with an array of lamps. And then you offer a nice seat, some sweet words of welcome. Then you offer Madhuparka. Those of you who do deity worship know what is Madhuparka. Madhuparka is a delicious beverage that's made of yogurt, milk, ghee, honey and sugar. How many of you do deity worship here and you know what Madhuparka is? Yes, some of you know what's Madhuparka. So you offer that Madhuparka, then you offer food, and then you offer some lodging in case the guest is tired and wants to rest for a while. And then when the guest, it's time for the guest to leave, you escort the guest out, at least till the door. And actually it is also an etiquette that the more exalted the guest, the longer you go out to escort that guest. In some cases it may be all the way to his residence. We see that in the case of the Pandavas and Krishna. When Krishna was in Hastinapur and the time came for him to leave, of course they begged him to stay. That's another thing that the guest is supposed to do. And the host is supposed to, the host is supposed to do, and the guest is supposed to, you know, say, no, I have to go ahead. This is not mentioned in the scripture, but that's generally how it goes. Just as when you offer food and you say, take, you're supposed to say, take. But then the guest, after eating a certain amount, is supposed to say, no, thank you. I remember one time, I was in Rajasthan, and there are many royal families there, you know. So there was one descendant of one such royal family, and this devotee had taken me for prasadam to his house. He was a devotee. So we were three or four of us, and we were eating, and there was a real royal feast he had prepared, and he was himself serving. And he had a pretty commanding personality, so you couldn't say no so many times, so you had to take it. So when he came in front of you, you didn't have the courage to say no. So you took whatever he served, and then item after item, second serving, third serving, and finally it was too much. And we were saying no. Then our nose became stronger, we were putting our hands. And then finally we had to almost beg him. Then he said, okay, now I'll stop. So he said, in our community, it's a custom that until the guest practically falls at your feet and begs you to stop, you have to keep on serving him. Because till then it may think that the host is being miserly in giving hospitality and serving. You know, it's very funny. In some communities in India, you see, the customs differ. So in one community, you give, you know what a papad is? Papad is a certain item. Anyway, we won't describe that. So in some communities, you give the papad in the beginning. In some, you give it during the meals. And in some, you're supposed to give it only when it's all over. Right? So in that community, if you give the papad in the beginning, then he's offended. That means you want me to just get up and go away. I shouldn't eat anything. So there's many little things like this. But nowadays, people are blissfully unaware of such things. Anything goes, you just serve in any order, in any way. So in any case, this is the way it's done. So you escort the guest. Then you go up. So Krishna said, no, I want to go. But they persuaded him. So he stayed on. It happened twice. Then Krishna said, I really have to go because my relatives in the Yadu dynasty are waiting for me. So then finally they left. And then the Bhagavatam described how they accompanied Krishna for a certain distance. Then they went outside the city for a certain distance. They didn't want to let go. And finally Krishna persuaded them to go back. So the guest is supposed to push the host back. Please, go back. It's very late. You please, go back. Then the host finally agrees, all right, I'll go back. So these are some of the finer niceties and the formalities of Vedic hospitality. So coming back to our story. So naturally the guest had been offered by this Brahmana some seat to sit on, some water and so on. And he said, I'm hungry. So the Brahmana happily offered him his share of the barley powder, which the guest partook, but he was still hungry. So the Brahmana was thinking, what should I do now? So his wife stepped forward and said, please offer my share to our guest. He said, no, no, because you are the lady of the house, it's very important, you should be in good health. Because if you fall sick due to hunger, then there'll be trouble. She said, no, 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 I am with you, whatever you do, I will follow accordingly. Please give my share to our guest. Let us do our dharma properly. So then he took his wife's share and gave it to the guest. He ate that, but his hunger was not yet appeased. Then the son stepped forward and said, please give my share. And the father, that is the host, replied, son, you're a young man. The pangs of hunger are stronger for the young than for the old. So it's not good for you. I need you to survive, otherwise who's going to do all my shraddha and everything once I leave? The son said, no, no, don't worry, we must perform our duties very nicely. So he insisted. So the father gave the son's share also to the guest. The guest was still hungry. Then the daughter-in-law stepped forward and said, father-in-law, please give my share to the guest. Father said, absolutely no, I can't do that, at least you must eat. But she also insisted. Finally, the Brahmana relented and he gave the fourth share of that body powder to the guest. So as soon as the guest ate that, then he declared, actually, my dear Brahmana, I am the personality of the demigod in charge of religion, dharma, personified. Actually, I have come here in disguise just to test you. I am enormously pleased by your spirit of hospitality, your adherence to the norms of dharma, of serving guests, and especially I am happy to see the purity of your intent in serving guests. I am so pleased with you, and I want to tell you that even as we are talking now, this event has become a topic of conversation up in the heavenly planets. And they are admiring your adherence to the principles of dharma. And just see, they have begun showering flowers. And indeed, as the Brahmana family looked up, there were flowers raining down from the heavenly planets. And then Dharma said, please ascend my vehicle. You have to immediately ascend to the higher planets, to Brahmaloka. That is your destination because of your adherence to Dharma like this. So there was a chariot that came, a celestial chariot. They boarded it and they ascended towards Brahmaloka. And this is the mongoose, remember, narrating the story. So he said, I was also around there, and I was in my hole, and I emerged from the hole and scurried in order to search for some food that may have been left over. And the moment I touched some of the bali powder that had fallen on the ground and the water that had washed the lotus feet of Dharma, you know, when he had arrived there and offered that hospitality, and also the flowers that had rained from the heavenly planets, immediately half of my body turned to gold, my head and half of my body. And I was really perplexed. So then I realized that this act of hospitality was something extraordinary. And therefore, merely by coming in accidental contact with the remnants of that hospitality, the traces of that hospitality, half my body had turned into gold. But now the question arose, what about the other half of my body? That should also turn to gold. I can't have a body half made of gold and half not made of gold. So I searched everywhere. I went to the ashrams of sages, in the hermitages, in the monasteries. I went to temples. I went to kings who were performing sacrifices and ceremonies. I went everywhere. But my body would not, the other half of my body would not turn to gold. But when I heard Maharaj Yudhishthir, the son of Dharma, is performing the Ashwamedha Yajna, and I knew the glories of Maharaj Yudhishthir and his fame is spread all over the three worlds. So I had hope that when I came here And when I came in contact with the remnants of the sacrifice here, that surely the other half of my body would turn to gold because of the exceptional caliber and the quality of the hospitality that had been rendered here. But just see, my body is still the same. It hasn't, the other half of my body has still not become gold. And therefore my criticism that this entire ceremony of hospitality and religiosity conducted under the auspices of Maharaj Yudhishthira actually is not even worth the a little quantity of barley powder that was offered by that Brahmana in charity in Kurukshetra. So all the assembled kings and sages and Brahmanas were struck with wonder to see this, to hear about this story. Anyway, there's a background also given by Sage Vaishampayana to King Janamejaya, but then the story will go on too long. But suffice it to say that this it demonstrates many lessons to learn from this story. One, that even the poorest of the poor can and should offer whatever hospitality is available according to their means. Now, a point of caution. Both the examples of hospitality, the one done by Maharaj Yudhishthira and the one done by the Brahmana family in Kurukshetra, represent two extremes of hospitality, neither of which we as ordinary people of Kali Yuga are capable of. We don't have the kind of wealth and gold and everything else that Maharaj Yudhishthira had. Neither do we have the capability to house so many guests and treat them and make them happy. It's hard enough to make one guest happy. So we can't really follow King Yudhishthira's example, really, in a literal sense. And in a literal sense, neither can we follow the example of the Brahmana family, because we would die if we were to imitate that. Therefore, as we were mentioning yesterday, what's necessary is to understand the spirit of it. Whether one is rich, whether one is poor, it doesn't matter. Offer hospitality according to your capacity and with your heart. The purity of intent is very important. And so important is the service of guests that Lord Krishna himself demonstrated this. And we see this picture over here of Lord Krishna offering hospitality to his devotee and friend Sudama. It's one of the very popular stories, and I'm sure every one of us has heard the story of Sudama in some form or the other. Let's try to discuss this story, and I think that we come across some points that we didn't know or we didn't remember. It's always such a pleasure to hear the stories of the Lord and his devotees, even though we heard them before, because that's the nature of Krishna Katha, and also because every time we hear it, there's something new that we didn't know, some new aspect, some new realization that comes up. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 80 and 81, Shukadeva Goswami narrates this wonderful pastime. We'll go on discussing this as much as time permits, and we'll continue it tomorrow if there is a need. And we have other topics to discuss as well tomorrow. Sudama was a Brahmin, and he was Krishna's friend from his school days. He was very learned in Vedic knowledge. His senses were controlled. He was very peaceful and very austere by nature. He would also live in such a simple way. And just like the Brahmana of Kurukshetra, perhaps he didn't perform that vow, but because of his austerities, he and his wife both were extremely skinny, because they were always emaciated with hunger. In fact, Sudama was so thin that you could see his veins through his skin, and his bones were so prominent, they were jutting out of his body, and his wife was also like that. And both of them were actually very great devotees of Krishna. Now, Sudama, he was quite all right with the situation. His wife was also all right for herself, but she could not tolerate to see her husband in this condition. So after much trepidation, hesitation, she approached her husband and said, "My dear husband, I cannot bear to see you in this emaciated condition. You have a very wonderful friend who is none other than Lord Krishna, who is the spiritual master, the Lord of the entire universe. And he is living presently in Dwarka. He is the master of the Andhakas, Vishnis and the Bhojas. And we all know that he is very, very fond of his devotees and the Brahmanas. And even those who think of the Lord's lotus feet for a few moments even with sincerity are blessed with enormous gifts by the Lord. What then to speak of sincere devotees like your good self? So if you approach him, he will surely fulfill your desires. Even though you don't desire it," she said, "but he will definitely supply you with all sorts of material prosperity." Now Sudama was not at all inclined to approach Krishna for any material things for himself. But out of compassion for his wife, because he saw his wife was suffering so much with anger, with hunger, I beg your pardon, not anger. Normally I always say a hungry person is an angry person, but not so with Sudama and his wife. They never used to get angry. They bore hunger very well. And this was one of the things that Dharma told that Brahmana. You know, he said, because hunger is the time when our virtue is tested. Because when you're hungry, then you really don't care, you just want food. And you're not really inclined to think about religious principles and so on. But this Brahmana was thinking about that despite being so hungry. And that's why the demigods even were showering flowers from the heavenly planets. So anyway, Sudama was, and his wife both were like that. They were not angry at all. But Sudama considered the precarious condition of his wife. And he said, "Let me for her sake go. And in any case, actually the real reason I want to go is that I will be able to have darshan of my dear friend Lord Krishna." So he said, "All right, I will go. But then what gift do I carry for Krishna?" So she was anxious because there was absolutely nothing at home. So then she went and begged four palmfuls, fistfuls of flat rice from the neighboring Brahmanas. And she packed it, she wrapped it in a torn piece of cloth and she gave it to her husband. And he tied it at the end of a stick and he was carrying it. He had the stick on his shoulder and he set out. And as he was walking, it was a long journey. And he was thinking as he was walking, how will I be able to see Krishna? Why was he thinking like that? Because, you know, who is Sudama? He was thinking, I'm just an ordinary, poor, insignificant Brahmana. And look at my clothes, torn, dirty. And who is Krishna? He's the Lord of the universe. He's living in the midst of unlimited opulence in Dwarka. Maybe the gatekeepers won't even allow me in. So anyway, he proceeded, he ultimately reached Dwarka. And there were some other local Brahmanas who also wanted to go in. So they joined him and they had to go past three guard stations, three gateways. And ultimately, they passed by the residence of the Andhakas and the Vrishnis, who were the close associates of Krishna. And normally, other people, ordinary people, were not allowed access to this area. But Sudama was walking through. And finally, he saw these 16,000 odd palaces, gigantic and extraordinarily opulent palaces, which were the palaces of Krishna. And as you know, Krishna had 16,108 queens. And for each queen, he had one palace. And Krishna was simultaneously present with each of these queens in these palaces. So as Sudama came, he came to the first palace. which was the palace of Rukmini Devi, who is the senior most queen of Krishna. And he was just struck with wonder looking at these palaces and the opulence of it. He was just struck with wonder, speechless. He had never before seen such opulence. And as he entered that palace, he immediately experienced the bliss of liberation from this material world. That's how Shukadeva Goswami explains. He was experiencing enormous happiness just by entering there. And as he entered the palace, Krishna, who was seated on the bed of Rukmini Devi, along with Rukmini, he saw Sudama coming from a distance. And with great joy, he arose from his seat on the bed and hastened towards Sudama. And he embraced him with great pleasure and welcomed him. By embracing Sudama, he felt so much joy. Krishna began to cry tears of ecstasy, and so did Sudama. And then holding his hand, he welcomed him into the inner chambers where he had been sitting with Rukmini Devi. So this is another example of how we welcome a guest. We go out to welcome the guest and then escort the guest in and then speak some few words of welcome. And depending on the relationship one has, obviously the dealings will vary accordingly. So then Krishna brought Sudama in and made him sit on his consort Rukmini Devi's bed. And then he sat on the floor and he offered him all sorts of tokens of respect. And then he washed his feet, Sudama's feet, personally. And he took that water, Charanamrita, and sprinkled it on his head. Then he smeared Sudama's body with all sorts of fragrant substances like sandalwood and aguru. And then he also offered incense, you know, very fragrant incense to him. He offered arati with lamps to him, then offered a cow in charity. And when all this was going on, Sudama was just sitting, wondering what on earth is happening. Sudama was just too stunned to really respond in any way. He was just sitting, thinking, how wonderful is Krishna? Who am I? Who is he? But just see the way he is offering hospitality to me. So he accepted the hospitality. This also happened by Krishna's arrangement. And this is exactly the scene we see here, that Krishna is washing the feet of Sudama with great joy and happiness. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is teaching us how to welcome guests in our place and how to serve them. So then he sat with Sudama for some time, and in the meanwhile, as all this was going on, Rukmini Devi was also struck with wonder, and she immediately realized this guest is a very special guest. So she began to fan Sudama with the whisk fan, and she was standing by as Krishna was serving Sudama in different ways. And the other members of the palace, you know, there were many other assistants and so on, they were looking on with great astonishment. They said, what kind of pious activity must this poor Brahmana have performed, that the Lord of the universe, the spiritual master of the three worlds, the Lord of the goddess of fortune, is actually washing his feet, is worshipping him. And the goddess of fortune herself is fanning him. And the Lord has given his own seat on his consort's bed to this Brahmana. His clothes are torn, his clothes are dirty, he's skinny, his bones are sticking out, his veins can be seen. He will be seen with contempt by people in the outside world. But Lord Krishna is dealing with him with so much respect and devotion. So even they were actually astonished. And this went on for some time. And then Sudama rested for a while. And he rested for the night even. In the meanwhile, Krishna sat with Sudama, and as they held hands, he said, "Sudama, you know, please tell me, just like when two friends meet after a long time, you know, let's say two school friends, they pass out of school, and they meet after like 30, 40 years or something like that. Then they catch up, you know, remember in school, you know, you used to play that prank on the teacher, you did this and you did that." So they were catching up at all times, exchanging notes. So then, "Sudama, after we left Gurukul, and you had given Dakshina to our Guru Sandipadi Muni, then you must have gone and married a compatible wife, I presume. But I do know that you are following the principles of the Grihastha Ashram very strictly, because you are not at all hankering for any material opulence, and you have no material desires in you. You're living such a simple life. I remember how you and I used to serve our Guru Sandipadi Muni in Avanti. The spiritual master is of course the object of veneration for everyone. And for me, anyone who serves the spiritual master with great awe and veneration, with devotion, is glorious in my eyes." So Krishna was speaking like this. And then he said, "Do you remember, Sudama, one day our spiritual master's wife sent us on an errand to fetch some wood in the forest, and we went there and we were caught in the middle of an unseasonal storm that suddenly erupted and it began to rain heavily. There was strong wind, it became dark and there was water everywhere, and we were shivering in the cold, and all we had was each other, and we were holding hands and trembling with fear and cold and being wet and drenched to the core, and we had nowhere to go, so we just went from place to place and finally sat there, and the whole night passed in this way. And the next morning after sunrise, when the storm had abated, our Guru, being extremely worried about us, came into the forest searching for us. He found us and he embraced us with great relief and joy. And he said, 'My dear boys, the body is extremely dear to everyone, but you have not cared for the comforts and discomforts of your body only in order to serve me. I am extremely pleased with your spirit of service, and I bless you that all your desires in life will be fulfilled, and I also bless you that all the Vedic mantras that you have learned thus far from me will never lose their meaning for you.' This was a very important blessing." You see, as devotees, we also learn so many things in Krishna consciousness. We learn about devotional service, we learn Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, we become enthusiastic in devotional service. And after some time, it may happen, if we don't follow the rules and regulations properly, we don't do our sadhana properly, we lose enthusiasm for Krishna consciousness. So in a sense, the meaning of all that we have learnt is lost, implying that we have lost the taste for our Krishna consciousness. So it's always important that we should rigidly adhere to whatever we have been taught from devotees, from the scriptures, from the spiritual masters, and so on. So then Sandipadi Muni was very pleased, and Krishna was narrating this to Sudama. And they talked about many such episodes that happened in their student life, as schoolboys, as Gurukul residents. And then Sudama rested for the night because he had been tired. He ate sumptuously, he was fed the most delicious delicacies and foodstuffs which he had never had before. And then next morning he wanted to depart. And Krishna escorted him. He came out of the palace and he walked him down along the road, and then he saw him off. And Sudama was in total bliss, complete bliss. And actually there's a very important episode which I need to tell you about, which happened before the departure of Sudama. And that is when they were sitting together, Krishna began to smile mischievously at Sudama. And he was smiling and looking upon him with great affection because he spotted a little bulge in the clothing of Sudama. And he understood that this was, he's after all the Antaryami, the super soul residing in everybody's heart. So anyway, internally he knew, but even externally he could spot that there was some little pouch that Sudama was hiding from him. So Krishna was smiling mischievously because he was thinking, Sudama, in his mind he was thinking, I am going to make you show what you have brought for me. How long are you going to hide this bundle in your cloth? Let's see, I am going to expose you and expose what you brought. And then he was also thinking, Sudama, all these symptoms of poverty that I see on your person will not last beyond tomorrow morning. So Krishna was smiling like this. And then he was trying to ask him for a gift. What gift have you brought for me? Sudama, you've come all this way, surely you've got something for me. And then he chanted this verse.
Do we have the board up here?
It's a nice verse, which also will give us the essence of not just devotion and devotional service, but also which contains the essence of hospitality, actually speaking, because I've already mentioned there's a parallel in the two, because hospitality has also to be offered with devotion. This is text 3 from chapter 81. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Kim upayanam manitam.
Kim upayanam manitam.
Brahman me bhavata griha.
Brahman me bhavata griha.
Arnvapyupahritam bhaktaihi.
Arnvapyupahritam bhaktaihi.
Premna bhuryeva me bhave.
Premna bhuryeva me bhave.
Bhuryapya bhakto pahritam. Name doshaya kalpate.
Name doshaya kalpate.
One Prabhuji, one Mataji. Chant.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Upayanam anitam.
Upayanam anitam.
Brahman me
said, Kim upayanam anitam brahman me bhavata grihat, grihat from your home, bhavata, what have you brought, upayanam anitam, what gift have you brought from me from your home? Krishna is keen to know from his devotee. See, we struggle to offer things to Krishna. Please accept, O Krishna, we have to chant mantras, we have a process, ring a bell, and there's so many things we have to do. Take a bath, come with fresh clothes, Krishna, and then also we are doubtful whether Krishna will accept our offering because we're thinking, am I pure enough for Krishna to accept? Krishna does accept, of course, but there are cases when the devotee doesn't want to give and Krishna says, I am going to take it from you. You don't want to give it to me, but I will make sure I snatch it from you. So that's the level of devotion that we can only hope for and aspire for one day. Not that we don't want to give Krishna, but Sudama's not wanting to give to Krishna was because he was thinking, how can I give this ordinary food, stale food? It's just ordinary flat rice, which is poor man's food. I can't give this to Krishna, the husband of the goddess of fortune. But Krishna was eager. So he had a mischievous twinkle in his eye and he said, so Sudama, haven't you brought any gift from me from your home? And just in case Sudama should think, which indeed he was, how can I offer this very ordinary gift to Krishna? He says, anu api upahartam bhaktaihi. If one of my devotees or if my devotees offer me even a small gift, premna bhuri eva me bhavet, that becomes very bhuri, very heavy for me because it's loaded with prema, with love. So even if my devotees offer me a very insignificant gift, that gift I consider to be very significant and heavy because it has devotion. On the other hand, he says, bhuri api abhakta ubharitam. If an abhakta, if a non-devotee gives me a gift upaharitam, even though that gift may be from a material point of view very big, name toshaya kalpate, I am not pleased by such worship or by such an offering. Very important principle. And then interestingly, the very next verse that Krishna says is the same verse from Bhagavad Gita. Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhaktya prayachati tadaham bhakti bhavitam ashnami prayatatmanah. Exactly the same verse is spoken by Krishna here again. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, one of our acharyas, very prominent when it comes to writing very beautiful commentaries on the Srimad Bhagavatam, he says in his commentary on this verse that Krishna doesn't look at the externals of the offering, even to the extent that he doesn't look at not just the quantity but even the quality of the offering. The quality of the offering, of Sudama's offering from a material point of view, was inferior because it was ordinary puffed, it was chipped flat rice and it was a little stale by now anyway. But what does he look at? He looks at the devotion. And when there is devotion, then he gets so bewildered in ecstasy of that love that he doesn't even realize what he's doing. So if some devotee offers him a flower is to be smelled. But in his ecstasy, Krishna eats that flower. This is what devotion does to Krishna and bewilders him. That is the power of a devotee over Krishna. So the point that Krishna has made here to Sudama applies even for our rule of hospitality. If I'm not a person of many means, I'm not economically or in other ways capable of according gorgeous hospitality to my guests, a few sweet words, a little water, sincere words of welcome, some devotion in that hospitality is enough to please the guest. On the other hand, if we have gorgeous facilities and arrangements made, but you know that the guest doesn't really have that feeling for you, then you're not so happy despite all the grand arrangements. You don't even feel like being there at that place. So this is a very important point. And we see this happening in the case of Krishna, Vidura and Duryodhana. I'm sure you've all heard this story before and I'll repeat it briefly now. When Krishna was going to Hastinapur one time, Duryodhana wanted to, wicked as he was and cunning as he was, wanted to influence Krishna to switch sides, because he knew that the Pandavas were dependent only on Krishna. And if he was successful in bringing Krishna over to his side, the battle would be won even without any fighting, without a single arrow being shot. So he invited Krishna to a grand feast. But Krishna said, "No, Duryodhana, I can't come to your place. One should eat at only two places. At a house, that is apart from your own house, of course. One should eat at the home of a host or at the home of a friend. And you are neither. So I will not come to your house to eat." Duryodhana was enraged. But Krishna walked out. And he went to the house of Vidura straight. Vidura was away from home at that time. Krishna knocked. "I'm hungry, open the door, I'm hungry." So that's what Krishna does. When there's a relationship of love, he come and demand your food. You don't have to go and, "Krishna, please, please accept my offering." No, Krishna said, "Give me your offering." So he went to Vidura's place and he was knocking, but Vidura was not there, and his wife was in, Vidurani. And she was also not so wealthy. So she opened the door and she was flabbergasted. She was shocked with happiness to see Krishna standing at her doorstep. And she was so bewildered, she didn't know what to do. She was beside herself with joy. Krishna, the Supreme Lord, was personally present at her doorstep. So Krishna invited himself in, because she was not in a state of mind to invite him. He invited himself in, so there was no word of welcome. Okay? That's the first principle of a guest. You should welcome the person with sweet words. No sweet words of welcome. Just a blank look of being stunned. She did offer a seat. That's the second principle. Krishna helped himself. And then when the time came for eating, he said, "Please give me something to eat. What are you doing? Standing here looking at me. I'm hungry. Give me something to eat." So she said, "What do I give him to eat?" So the only thing that was there was some bananas. She hadn't cooked anything. She thought that he would go to Duryodhana's feast. So he came, yes, there were some bananas. She was still so stunned with ecstasy that she was peeling the bananas and not knowing what she was doing. She was offering the peels to Krishna and throwing the bananas away. And Krishna was chomping away at the banana peels with great relish. And at that moment, Vidura walked in. And he was shocked. And he told his wife, "Have you gone mad? What are you doing?" And Krishna said, "Don't spoil everything." When she started offering the bananas, having come to her external consciousness, and when she was offering the banana proper to Krishna, Krishna says, "Oh, his fun is spoilt. It's not as tasty as the skin." Because earlier she was offering it with spontaneous ecstatic devotion. Now she was doing with some degree of reverence and fear, "Oh, I should offer the right thing in the right way." And then the fun was lost for Krishna. So the taste, as far as Krishna is concerned with the offering, is not so much in the actual quality of the, or the quantity of the offering, as I was mentioning, but in that intent, in that devotion that goes with it. And that is what Krishna relished. Similarly, when we go to when a guest welcomes, or a host welcomes a guest, this spirit, this purity of intent is very important in satisfying the guest. That doesn't mean that we should be negligent about the taste of the food and think, "I'm so devoted, I welcome the guest with so much devotion, I just close my eyes and put salt and everything." No, you've got to be very careful about that. But the point is that we have to do it with sincerity and with devotion. And this is the point that Krishna was making to Sudama here. And whether Krishna succeeds in getting the chipped rice, the flat rice, or not, and what happens after this, and then is Sudama's plan or Sudama's wife's plan fulfilled or not, If you want to know, you will have to come here same time, same place tomorrow. Because we will have to stop here as it is almost 9 o'clock. It's time for Arati. We have 2 minutes left. Time for just a quick question, if anybody has one. Yes.
The past time you were mentioning with Siddhama, how he received Siddhama, reminded me of how Vajrasuri sacrifice Krishna gets the service of washing everybody's feet, the first Vajrasuri. I always thought that just meant Krishna's humility, but it seems like there's a deeper meaning behind it. I was just wondering if you could speak on that.
Your question pertains to the Rajasuya Yajna. We'll discuss that tomorrow. That's the topic for tomorrow, one of the topics for tomorrow. Okay? Alright, so we'll stop here now and we'll have Arati. The same Krishna who's speaking to Sudama is present here on our altar. And we'll chant his names, have his wonderful darshan and glorify him. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki.